I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez of our state has the Democratic Party's panties all in a bunch. Plus, well, it's official. Katie Wilson will be Seattle's next mayor. We'll dive into one of her brightest ideas. Also, if you're taking your kids to see Santa Claus this season, I have one location you should probably avoid. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided on this Thursday. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I know some of you are probably like, Brandy, you told us that the show was going to be an hour late today. Psych. I thought it had to be. As you know, we have an ongoing public record suit against the city of Seattle. We had court on that this morning in the State Court of Appeals in downtown Seattle, and it got done earlier than expected, so we figured we'd keep the show on time. I rushed in the door, got myself together. Nicole did the whole show, got the whole show ready, and we're like, let's just not mess with people's schedules, shall we? I will say, it was actually streamed on TVW, so maybe I'll post video of it. Such a fascinating experience. Like, obviously, I think we'll win, but win or lose, such a cool experience. I would, on my free time, go and sit in and watch the Court of Appeals. Our case was like maybe third or fourth on the docket, and I'm so glad I got there early to watch the arguments. It's a really cool structure. If you've never watched it, you've got three judges, and then both sides get 10 minutes or so, and the judges just pepper them with questions, and it's so lively and interesting. And usually, you know, certain trials like this are kind of boring, but in the Court of Appeals, the process, it was just fascinating. So I'll post some video, but I do think that the court understood the arguments we were making. This goes back a couple years now to the failure, really, in our estimation, of the city of Seattle to produce in a timely manner records pertaining to the former city councilman Andrew Lewis. And so, you know, we'll revisit that another time and wait for the court's decision on that case. But it is still ongoing. We're still fighting it. So cool experience today. All right, it's official. I want to say I'm the first one who called the Seattle mayoral race, probably before I should have. But when we saw the socialist Katie Wilson, the trajectory that she was going on every day as ballots were being counted, we knew that there was just no way that was going to flip overnight, and Bruce Harrell was all of a sudden going to start collecting more votes. So Katie Wilson will be elected officially Seattle's next mayor. Gosh, I don't know how this is going to go. I mean, I imagine it'll go probably about as well as every other Seattle mayor in recent memory. But she is, and the mainstream media, this is very interesting. They won't call her a socialist. They don't call her a socialist. And she's not a member of the Democratic Socialists of America or Seattle. But she has said in news interviews that she's fine with the socialist label or the Democratic label. She's totally fine with either, which I find funny because she's basically acknowledging that being a Democrat in our state is virtually the same thing as being a socialist. I just find it so interesting that anytime any news organization writes something about me, what do they call me? Right wing. Nobody calls her left wing. I hold no positions further to the right than the positions she has to the left. And it just shows you that media bias. Now they're acting like they're normal, totally normalizing someone who is an absolute avowed socialist in her policy positions. For example, one of the most socialist things that you can support is government-run grocery stores.
Access to affordable, healthy food is a basic right. We cannot allow giant grocery chains to stomp all over our communities, close stores at will, and leave behind food deserts. Together, we can build a Seattle where fresh food is for everyone, not just for those who can afford it. Food deserts are not natural. Corporations create them when they abandon our communities. As mayor, I'm excited to step up and, with UFCW, explore public option grocery stores to fill those gaps.
Good God. Wow. Where do I even start? I mean, so much to unpack there, including this idea that she's almost suggesting at the end that this is something brand new, that this is some wonderful concept where they're going to explore the idea of government-run grocery stores. It's like, no, there's been a lot of socialists and commie societies that have done that. And every single time, it turns out the same. This isn't some new idea. This isn't some new experiment, something you're going to be able to do as the mayor of Seattle that hasn't worked for other societies. It's not going to work. And also, can we just play? I got to go point by point on this. So go ahead and play that again. Good God.
Access to affordable, healthy food is a basic right. We cannot allow giant grocery chains to stomp all over our communities, close stores at will, and leave behind food deserts.
You can't allow them to close stores at will. So you're saying you will not allow private businesses to decide that their business is no longer profitable and close it at will. So what does that, tell me how, Katie, first test of your mayorship, how does that work? You just force the company to keep the doors open, to keep paying people, to keep paying employees, no matter how much money they're losing. And all of this, of course, is made even worse in a city like Seattle, where the reason we end up with food deserts is directly the making of city government. Not some flippant decision by a big bad corporation that just decides, let's leave this poor neighborhood without a place to shop for groceries. This store is totally profitable, but let's close it anyway. No, you've made the stores not profitable. We've talked about this a million times. Again, I'm just absolutely beating a dead horse. Sorry, PETA. But you go from everything from increased wages, you have such a small, it's like 1% to 3%, and that might have been updated by now, but for grocery stores in terms of their profit margin. So every time you cut into that profit margin, they're going to have to get rid of employees, they're going to have to streamline in some way. So all these things that are done for the sake of, you know, the working class and the unions ultimately just comes back and hurts people. Union jobs, they're lost. Entire stores closed. That's hundreds of jobs that are lost. And then the people in the neighborhood don't have a place to shop. Not to mention the crime element. I mean, we just did a story on in the Lake City neighborhood. This was it Fred Meyer or is yeah, Fred Meyer that closed because they were dealing with ramp in addition to all the taxes, increased wages, everything else. They were dealing with an untenable public safety environment. So they'd had to take now this small profit margin, put it toward additional security. So that means security guards, which are not cheap. That means plexiglass galore, having to have people call someone beep, 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 if you want some toothpaste or whatever it is, ice cream. They always have to lock up the ice cream from the drug abusers. For some reason, the cold and the sugar, they really like. So you created, the city already created an environment where these private grocery stores are having a really hard time operating. And now you're telling me that the city will fix the problem it created? Gosh, something tells me, Katie, that's not going to work. And it's they have this idea that businesses like want to make less money. That, oh, they're closing it. They don't need to close it. They're just going to close it to stick it to poor people. No, if that business was profitable, they would continue to do it. So the best thing you can do is deregulate, stop these asinine increases in the minimum wage, and I don't know, work on public safety and make public safety better so they don't have to spend millions of dollars a year on increased safety measures. But somehow I think that the new mayor who supported police abolition is probably not going to make the city safer. Call me crazy. Just a little prediction that I have. All right, I got to talk about what happened on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives last night. So, of course, the shutdown's over. So that's good. And Democrats really didn't get anything. So they just held the whole country hostage for virtually nothing. Just a promise to revisit the health care issue. So by now, you're probably familiar with Washington's 3rd Congressional District and the fairly new congresswoman there, Marie Glusenkamp Perez. So she won. This is like in like right above Vancouver, Washington area. She won that seat and took it from Republicans. And this was when Jamie Herrera Butler, she was the Republican, and she had voted to impeach Donald Trump. So Republicans turned on her. They split the vote with Joe Kent running. And then Republicans, because of their infighting, lost the seat to Marie Glusenkamp Perez. But it's still a purple district. So she's only been there for a couple years. And she is, according to roll call, one of the 10 most vulnerable House members a year out from the 2026 midterm elections. So they list her as number 10. In the 3rd district, they said the race still tilts Democrat, but, you know, Trump had a good, I think he was plus 3 in that district when he ran. She was plus 3.8, so that just gives you a sense of, like, she won by 3 points and Trump won by 3 points. So she really can't afford to alienate Republicans in that district. There's a reason that the district has been red for so long, but that's a really difficult situation because you also can't alienate your base. So she has to decide, how do I walk a line and act as if, or be independent-minded? And she even says, I think, on her social media profiles, like, Washington's 3rd District's independent voice in Congress. So look, I'll say off the bat, I don't know how much of what I'm about to tell you is her posturing for her campaign, because she's vulnerable. I don't know how much of this is what she really believes. I don't know if she really is an independent voice, or if she realizes that, hey, I've got to put on this sort of show because I need to keep one foot in both camps, so to speak. So, of course, the whole shutdown thing is happening yesterday, but there's this diverging storyline that came out. You might be familiar with this by now, but if not, I just want to inform you of the story because it's crazy on its own. So there's an Illinois congressman, this from ABC News, who decided that he wasn't going to seek re-election. He cited some family and health issues in not seeking re-election. But he did it in a way that essentially ensured that his chief of staff would get the job. So I'll read this from you, for you. U.S. Representative Jesus Chuy Garcia confirmed Thursday that he won't seek a fifth term days after the Illinois Democrat backed a quiet effort to get his chief of staff to replace him on the March primary ballot. Garcia, 69, turned in his nominating petitions for the primary ballot on Monday, October 27th, the first day of the Illinois State Board of Elections filing period. A week later, on the last filing day, his chief of staff, Patty Garcia, who is not related to him, submitted her own to enter the 4th District race after a furious weekend effort to gather 2,500 signatures. The congressman didn't announce the plan publicly, opting for sporadic interviews with local media outlets. He said the decision to leave politics culminated from a confluence of health and family concerns during the most stressful week of his life. But the timing here is very important. So he, for all intents and purposes, is acting as if he's going to seek re-election. He does the filing. First day that the filing is open. Last day to file. His chief of staff quietly files to run for his seat. And this is a district where the Democrat is going to win no matter what. And so by doing that, because no Democrat's going to come in and challenge the sitting congressman, right? So they think he's running. They're not trying to build a campaign. They're not trying to do anything. So he doesn't want to give them that week to be able to change their minds and have this influx of Democrats who want to run for the seat. He wants his chief of staff to get it. So robs voters of their ability to choose their representative to Congress by doing this shady backroom chief of staff. It's really crazy stuff, and it should be condemned widely by both parties. But Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez decided to be the one to condemn it, not behind the scenes, very publicly on the floor of the House during the entire ordeal with the shutdown vote. Here it is.
Whereas on November 5th, 2025, on the last day of filing, Representative Garcia's chief of staff, Patty Garcia, submitted her own paperwork to enter the Democratic primary. Whereas on November 6th, after the filing deadline, Representative Garcia confirmed that he would not be seeking another term in 2026 and would be withdrawing his nominating petitions. Whereas Representative Garcia's chief of staff was the only Democrat who filed to run in the primary at the direction of Representative Garcia, undermining the process of a free and fair election.
You can hear unrest in the background.
Whereas Representative Garcia's actions are beneath the dignity of his office and incompatible with the spirit of the Constitution. Now, therefore,
Democrats are mad.
Be it resolved
that
the House of Representatives disapproves of the behavior of the representative from Illinois, Mr. Garcia.
Oh, her party was so mad. Oh my God, they were so mad. Now, look, I'm not a dumb. I might have blonde hair, but I'm not stupid. I understand that she's probably doing that. I mean, this is like a district that's a couple thousand miles from Washington State. You know, this is a moment where they're really focused on the shutdown. And she decides to take this public stance to try to basically censure him, so to speak, a little light of that. There's probably a reason for that. I think that she's very worried about her congressional seat. I don't know her personally. I don't know if this is a stand she would have taken if not for the election consequences. But frankly, I kind of don't care. I love it. And I think that's how everybody should act. it's one of the reasons I'm so passionate against the two parties, is people tend to look the other way when their own party does something wrong, even when they know, like this, it's just blatantly wrong. You robbed people in an entire congressional district of the ability to choose their representative on their own democratically. Coming from a party that's saying Donald Trump is a threat to democracy, it seems like a threat to democracy. So let's set aside whether she's just posturing, because I got a flurry of texts last night because I was sending out tweets like, you go, girl. People are like, don't encourage her. She's just pretending to be moderate because of the election. I'm like, I don't care. Now Democrats are mad at her. Democratic infighting. Love it. Love it. So, as I said, her party lost their mind over this. This is from Axios. Democratic infighting erupts over rogue House floor vote. So they talked about Marie Glusenkamp Perez. Says she shocked and dismayed her colleagues on Wednesday with a rogue effort to condemn retiring Rep. Chuy Garcia for effectively ensuring his chief of staff would succeed him in Congress. They said, why it matters. It was a rare moment of public infighting that resulted in a heated exchange between Glusenkamp Perez and House Minority Whip Catherine Clark. Yeah, the Minority Whip who's supposed to whip all the members into shape, get them all on the same page. I'm sure she really did not like that. It also said and points out that the move came just ahead of the vote to reopen the government that Democrats are largely unified in opposing. And there was a quote in here, a House Democrat who gave him a quote anonymously. Everyone has been trying to say to her, why today? We have been really focused. We have been really focused and have important work to do today. You don't need to do this right now. So they're basically calling her out for the timing of it. So I get that. I think Republicans would do the same if they had a member of their caucus who came to the floor to condemn the actions of another Republican just before a vote where they're supposed to be very unified. But she wasn't unified in the vote either. She voted against, or she voted in favor of, reopening the government. Democrats didn't like that either. This from the Seattle Times. Glusenkamp Perez is the lone Washington Democrat to support the deal to reopen the government. Of course, we have 10 members of Congress from our state. Two of them are Republicans. Eight of them are Democrats. She's the only one who sided with Republicans from our state to reopen the government. It was mostly along party lines. And she put out a pretty large statement about why. I'll read that for you. It said, tonight I voted to end this partisan car crash of a shutdown. Nobody likes paying even more money to insurance companies, and the fight to stop runaway health insurance premiums won't be won by holding hungry Americans hostage. Americans can't afford for their representatives to get so caught up in landing a partisan win that they abandon their obligations to come together to solve the urgent problems that face our nation. The last several weeks have been a case study in why most Americans can't stand Congress. None of my friends who rely on SNAP would want to trade their dinner for an ambiguous D.C. Beltway messaging victory, and I'm glad this ugly scene is in the rearview mirror. Now it's time for Congress to get back to work and build an economy where people aren't yanked around by partisan interests, where we understand national health doesn't come from insurance coverage, and reestablish a truly deliberative democracy. I'll work with whoever is necessary to reach those goals, and I don't give a damn which side of the aisle they sit on. So she puts herself in a precarious situation, because I do believe that there's obviously, I don't think that you do this and get the ire of your party in such a public fashion unless you are focused on the midterm elections. But you know, this is a period of time where we see the left of the Democratic Party really having a moment. So now, otherwise, she would have run. Democrats wouldn't have opposed her with any sort of primary challenger. Senate Minority Leader John Braun, a state senator, is the Republican who's running. He's quite popular in that district. He's also, you know, more of a reasonable middle-of-the-road Republican. And now, I think that there's a possibility, if Democrats are as mad as they're suggesting on the internet that they are at her, that they run a challenger against her from the far left. So, you know, maybe this strategy works out for her in getting some of those independent voters, but it could siphon off a segment of socialists, Democratic socialists, and progressives who aren't happy with what she did here. Will that make a difference? I'm not sure. So we'll see if her gamble pays off. We need to get her on the show. I think we've tried before. We'll have to get her and Senator Braun on the show a little closer, maybe to the midterms, perhaps, to talk about that district and what's going on down there. All right, coming up next, the Starbucks baristas. What have I said about them? The most entitled, whiny, annoying, workforce in America, please don't spit in my pumpkin spice latte. I'm going to give you some exceptions. Victor, my local Starbucks barista, I love you, man. I do. You're not included in this. You never whine. You always have a smile on your face. And I don't think that you walked out of your store today like the other baristas. So we're going to talk about that coming up next. First, our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, is the guy that you need to call if you're trying to sell your home, especially if you have some unique needs. For instance, Mark B, who is a recent client of Wes Jones, said that they were trying to sell his mom's house and none of the kids lived in the area and they knew that it needed some updates. And so they were worried about, oh my gosh, this is going to be kind of a burden for us. But nope. He says, we had to sell my mom's house. It needed a little bit of prep, new carpet, paint, yard work. None of us live nearby, and Wes and Erica and the team took care of it all. Very smooth experience. Just what I was hoping for. And none of that matters if you don't sell the house. Well, Wes got asking price and sold it in the first weekend. So just one of many sellwithwes.com success stories. So whatever your unique needs are, reach out to Wes Jones, talk through it with him. He's been in the business for a long time. He knows the local markets like the back of his hand. If you need some cosmetic upgrades, it's just the guy to go to. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. Go ahead, Nicole. What are the Starbucks baristas up today? Go ahead. What do they got for me? Some stupid
shit. My neck, my back, my paycheck is whack. My neck, my back, my paycheck is whack. My
hole,
my back, my paycheck is whack.
I wasn't expecting that. Do you know the song? It's not my neck, my back, my and my crack. So very creative there. The dance moves, one more time, just for my entertainment.
My neck, my back, my paycheck is
the
lack.
Dance moves leave
my
something
neck, my back,
to desire, don't you think?
My paycheck is lack. My neck, my back, my
you know,
paycheck
I shouldn't talk.
Is lack.
I'm not a great dancer either. So the Starbucks baristas throwing a fit today at their union stores, and it's Red Cup Day. I got to be honest, I don't know what Red Cup Day is. I just
what?
Say it as if
got,
I know
I
what it
mine.
Is. Is it when they just have a holiday cup?
So if you get a holiday drink, then you get a, you know, reusable cup.
Oh, you do? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, wow. This is not the day to walk off the job, but I think that's precisely probably why they chose today to walk off the job. It says more than 1,000 unionized Starbucks workers went on strike at 65 U.S. stores to protest a lack of progress in labor negotiations with the company. It has disrupted Starbucks Red Cup Day, which is typically one of the company's busiest days of the year. Oh, I should have just read this because it would have told me what. Sorry. Cart before the horse. Starbucks Workers United, the union organizing baristas, said Thursday morning that the strike had already closed some stores and was expected to force more to close later in the day. Dolce Spoltore, a barista from Pittsburgh, said a union conference call Thursday that it's hard for workers to be assigned more than 19 hours per week, which leaves them short of the 20 hours they would need to be eligible for Starbucks benefits. Spoltore said she makes $16 per hour. Quote, I want Starbucks to succeed. My livelihood depends on it. We're proud of our work, but we're tired of being treated like we're disposable. First of all,
unlike
I'm going to say something
that you get on Red Cup
Day. I'm going to say something that is going to anger some people. Dolce Spoltore. You are disposable.
You are.
You are. And that is just a really important lesson for you to learn early on in life. And I don't care who you are and where you work. You are, when I was in TV news, damn, I thought I was good at my job, but even I was disposable. Anyone is disposable if they're a big enough pain in the ass. And I promise you that there are a million people who could walk right into that Starbucks and do the job on day one. And I'm not trying to be mean to baristas. I drink more coffee than most. I appreciate my baristas, but this is not a high skill job. Sorry. I'm not sorry, okay? I'm just not. So there is a ton of reaction from the socialist side about this, cheering them on. The Starbucks Workers United is encouraging, I guess, solidarity for other citizens, even if it's at non-union stores. Don't buy Starbucks today at any location, today and beyond, while workers are on strike. So they're saying if you're in solidarity with the movement, you don't go into a Starbucks until they're not on strike anymore. It says this from Starbucks Workers United. We're prepared for this to become the biggest and longest ULP strike in Starbucks history. Say no contract, no coffee with us. Don't buy Starbucks for the duration of our open-ended strike, okay? The Democratic Socialists of America, 92% of unionized baristas just voted yes to an unfair labor practice strike. Baristas are ready to fight for an end to union busting and for our first strong contract. They need us to stand with them. No contract, no coffee. Again, bunch of different places that you can get coffee. I'm sure that people aren't just going to stop drinking coffee. Coffee everywhere. And then Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez showing her support and solidarity with the baristas. She says Starbucks employees have long fought against consistently unpredictable schedules, short staffing, low pay, and unfair labor practices. Today, Starbucks Workers United is striking to demand progress in stalled negotiations. Solidarity. Okay. Low pay. I really take issue with low pay. First of all, again, without trying to sound condescending, barista is not intended to be a quote-unquote high-paying job. It is not. But even so, you're making, in many of these locations, especially in Seattle, more than $20 an hour, which is just unheard of for a job like that.
Free college.
Free college, healthcare plans. You get, I mean, they want you to leave. They literally want you to do the job and move on to bigger and better things. They will pay for your college to get you to leave. Not because they want to get rid of you, but because they want you to find a career, something to do that you're really passionate about. It's one of the most generous companies in America, and you're still whining about it. Something tells me you just don't want to work. And that's okay, just say it. Find yourself a sugar daddy, you little barista. Find yourself a sugar daddy or a sugar furry or whatever floats your boat. Because it's okay to just not want a job. Look, hell, I don't want a job. I ask my husband all the time, can I be a stay-at-home dog mom? He's like, absolutely not. And that's just my reality. So you know what? I just think that maybe you should find a way to not have to work if it really is that big of a burden on you. Now, it's one thing if AOC and the Democratic Socialists of America are cheering on the strike of the Starbucks baristas. But even Senator Patty Murray is wiggling her way into this situation. She wrote a letter to the chief executive officer of Starbucks. She said, I write to you today regarding the status of collective bargaining negotiations between Starbucks Corporation and Starbucks Workers United. I'm reading it like an old school political speech because I'm taking it very seriously. I was cautiously optimistic that who am I trying to be? Who is the, why can I not, why am I, who's
sound
the
like
prime minister?
Judy Dench, that's who you sound like.
Why can I not think the prime minister I'm thinking of? Who the hell is the famous prime minister? Why can't I think of it? Churchill. Good God. Churchill. I'm okay. Going with Churchill.
Okay.
I was cautiously optimistic that Starbucks and SBWU would come to an agreement following the February 27th announcement that the company and union had agreed to a path forward on negotiations. However, more than a year and a half later, a completed collective bargaining agreement has yet to be finalized. I believe that the time to come to an agreement has, okay, I'm done, has long passed and urge you to immediately come to the table. I look forward to a serious agreement that provides over 12,000 unionized Starbucks workers across the country with fair pay and working conditions. I appreciate your timely consideration of this important matter. Again, fair pay is subjective. And I would say that over $20 an hour to be a barista is more than fair. And I imagine that the company agrees. All right. Before we get to our segment, Unbelievable, talking about a Santa Claus that you absolutely must avoid this holiday season. Fascinating story surfaced about our friend, State Representative Tara Simmons. So a little background on her. If you're not familiar, we've talked about her on the show quite a bit. She is the first formerly incarcerated person, that's how they reference it, to be elected to the state house in Olympia. She had felony convictions, spent time addicted to drugs, in and out of prison, etc. And then look, she turned her life around, which I think is totally cool, but she's dedicated now a lot of her time in Olympia to pushing soft on crime policies and trying to help former felons or felons, you know, former incarcerated persons out like herself. Or at least she was. There's a story out today from Investigate West. The headline, Make It Make Sense. Advocates stunned as Washington lawmaker helps slash funds for groups clearing old drug convictions. So I saw that headline and I'm like, what?
First of all, she is down in Olympia doing everything she can do to make sure that people who are convicted of crimes, like, get their records cleared or don't even go to prison in the first place. She's totally pro-criminal. So now this headline says that she's supported slashing funds for a group clearing old drug convictions. Let's read on from Mo Clark and Investigate West. When Cameron Zurunzua learned in April that Washington had slashed its state funding of her Spokane-based legal aid organization, she frantically called State Rep Tara Simmons. I was so alarmed. I asked her straight up, what happened? She is the legal director and co-founder of The Way to Justice. Simmons, the first formerly incarcerated lawmaker in Washington, has vowed to fight for other formerly incarcerated people and was the state representative who Zurunzua thought would have fought the hardest against the cuts. She made it seem like she didn't know, Zurunzua said. So this organization, The Way to Justice, Spokane-based, all of a sudden they find out that state funding had been slashed for her organization, calls up Rep. Tara Simmons to try to figure out, oh my God, what's going on? And she says Rep. Simmons told her, oh, I don't know. Yeah, I'll look into it. I'll figure it out. Investigate West, a little background, said in 2021, Simmons, a Democrat from Bremerton, helped secure state funding to help hundreds of thousands of people vacate drug-related convictions from their criminal records after the Washington State Supreme Court deemed the state's felony drug possession law to be unconstitutional in a ruling known as State v. Blake. In 2023, in fact, Simmons was able to vacate her own felony convictions. In media reports, she said it felt like she had been liberated from an invisible prison. But the state legislature's decision in April to slash funding was a blow to organizations like The Way to Justice that have been key in providing legal support to those eligible to vacate their cases. And Simmons didn't offer Zurunzua much of an explanation. So you're following her along here. So she fights Tara Simmons to get this funding in place. State v. Blake upended a lot of criminal convictions, and all of a sudden people who had criminal convictions that were either made worse by or aggravated by longer prison sentences because they had a possession charge, all of a sudden they were eligible to maybe have convictions thrown out, have records cleared, etc. So Tara Simmons is like, awesome, I'm one of those people, you know, got all this funding in place. 2023, she gets her own felony conviction vacated. And remember, she was so happy about it at the time, she went to the range and fired a quote-unquote weapon of war that she voted to ban. Remember this story we did? That she's posting that she's at the gun range. Oh, women need to learn how to protect themselves these days. And she's got this rifle that you can't even buy anymore in Washington State because of Democrats like her. And at the time, we pointed out that this was very hypocritical, but we also asked ourselves, wait, isn't she a felon? Because if she's a felon, and she is a felon, she can't be at the range shooting that gun. And then we dug into it and found out that she had got her sentence vacated. So she was no longer a felon and she applied to get her firearms rights restored. So she's benefited quite a bit from the funding she put in place to help people like her and apparently help her as well. And now that funding has been slashed and the organizations are like, hey, yo, what's going on? Well, it turns out that Representative Simmons behind the scenes was in favor of slashing it. She gets her record cleared, then pulls up the ladder behind her. This from an email that Investigate West obtained. Emails obtained by us show that behind the scenes, Simmons supported the cuts, telling her colleagues that the state was nearly done with its work, despite state data showing only 38% of all the unconstitutional convictions had been vacated as of July 2025. So she's sending emails behind the scenes saying, oh, you know, this work's almost done. It's okay. We don't really need this money. When data shows, no, 38% of people are the only ones, including you, by the way, who have got their convictions vacated. So goes on to say, others have argued that the cuts were less about cost savings and more about her aunt. Like, why did she do this, right? What are we trying to get at here? Well, Investigate West might have an answer to that. Some have argued that the cuts were less about cost savings and more about her ongoing personal conflict with one of the state-supported legal aid organizations that get this money, an organization called Civil Survival. So they also saw their funding slashed. She served as its executive director from 2015 until she was fired from the organization in July 2024 following two separate third-party investigations that found repeated violations of the organization's policies. When the budget cuts were made, Simmons was simultaneously suing the organization, which had received around $800,000 in 2023 and 2024 to support its Blake-related work. In fact, the 2023 contract with Civil Survival that gave them all this money to do this work was signed by Tara Simmons. So now the co-founder and CEO of The Way to Justice, which is angry about all of this, said those funds weren't wasteful when she was at the organization. So now think about this in Tara Simmons' background. What explanation makes sense besides this being retribution? This needs to be investigated. So she works at Civil Survival. 10 years, she helped co-found it. Third-party investigations, found problems. She loses her job. And then all of a sudden, this pool of money to help vacate drug convictions that she herself personally benefited from. Now she doesn't think that money's so important. Going to a cause that she's championed for years, that is like the underlying reason why she's even in Olympia. And now she thinks that it's not so important. And in fact, when someone called her to ask about why the funding was slashed, she acted like she didn't know anything about it, despite emails to the contrary showing she actually supported slashing the funding. That is corruption, ladies and gentlemen. And look, I don't support the funding, especially in a budget crisis. I don't support it at all. But I'm smart enough and you're smart enough to put two and two together and say something stinks to high heaven here. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, the Santa Claus you really should avoid if you're in the Tacoma area with your kids this holiday season. First, our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington want to invite you, yes, you, to their 2025 holiday gala. It's happening December 13th. Very fancy at the pavilion at the Seattle Sculpture Park. And the theme, holiday glam, ice. I like that. You could dress like, I have this dress that would be perfect. Unfortunately, I can't attend this year because we have our neighborhood holiday party and it was already scheduled. But I have, remember the second dress I wore for my wedding?
Yes.
The white sparkly one? Would that not have been perfect for this?
Yep, it would.
So you could join them for an unforgettable evening at the Seattle Sculpture Park as it transforms into a shimmering winter wonderland. Catered seasonal delights, lively music, dancing beneath the stars. Let the evening glow as you mingle, sip, and celebrate the season. Dressed to impress, this year is your chance to sparkle. We invite you to embrace the theme with shades of silver and glacial blue. So if you'd like to attend, if you're interested in housing policy in Washington or just mingling and hobnobbing with some politicians and the like, attend the 2025 holiday gala that RHA is having. Go to rhawa.org, rhawa.org. And while you're there, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord, make sure you become a member of RHA today. All right. Well, do you really know whose lap your child is sitting on? Really, ever? Go to the mall. It's a holly jolly Santa Claus. I would argue you never really know who the person is behind that beard. Could be a guy who murdered his wife. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. This is genuinely disturbing. So there is a guy named Robert Selland. This is the article from Cairo 7 News. Family concerned that woman's killer is set to be Santa at a Tacoma event. Says a local family is outraged after discovering that Robert Selland, who was found not guilty of murdering his wife by reason of insanity 14 years ago, is set to play Santa at a Tacoma holiday event. Selland spent nearly a decade at Western State Hospital before his release last year. He's currently under the supervision of the Department of Social and Health Services and is reportedly compliant with his medication and release conditions. But Cheryl, the sister of victim Carol Selland, says he shouldn't be allowed to just go around and exist in life like he used to before he took her life. I want to stop it before it starts because I don't think an innocent child should have to sit on a murderer's lap. Cheryl found out from family and friends that Selland himself posted on Facebook he was playing Santa at a holiday swap meet in Tacoma from the end of November through December. So apparently the event he's scheduled to play Santa at from November 28th to December 21st is some swap meet that's happening at 8101 Pacific Avenue in Tacoma. Says, come see Santa, bring your cell phone, take a picture, $7 per person. And he's there all day. Now, something tells me the swap meet organizers will probably pretty quickly tell him he can't do that, but who knows? And look, he was found not guilty, but he still killed her. And he was deemed mentally insane. He spent a decade at Western State. That is not someone in any form or fashion for any reason who should be playing Santa and have kids sit on his lap. And it is very important that parents in Tacoma know who he is, what he did, and, yeah, have a say in the matter. But again, I go back to, do you ever really know? I mean, for instance, if you were a child predator or a sex offender, you wouldn't be able to play Santa. Or if you did, you'd get in big trouble for playing Santa because you'd have conditions and that would, you know, regulate that kind of environment. But I mean, let's be honest. I am sure that this is not the only Santa Claus in Washington State or across the country who has a criminal history. You don't know. You don't know who that person is. Is that weird? Like, I don't want to ruin people's Christmas memories that they make with their kids at the mall they've been going to for 10, 15 years. But you got to think about these things. You have no idea who the Santa Claus is. You have no idea what kind of background check. Maybe worth calling. Am I spinning parents up too much? Maybe if you've always gone to this mall, this place, call the mall and say, hey, just wanted to make sure, does your Santa go through a criminal background check before? I mean, that's fair. Why is that not fair?
No, I think it is. It's kind of a weird thing that we do when you think about it. But
yes, I'm going to send my child to sit on a strange man's lap.
Yeah.
I hate to rob everyone of their innocence, but we are not living in innocent times.
Yeah.
We are not living in innocent times.
There are
maybe
a
best
lot
to have a family member dress
sweet
up as Santa.
So just yes. Make sure okay, you're sorry. Finding a sweet Santa to go see.
We've been doing it for a long time without any issue, but I don't think it's really beyond the pale to call a mall and say, "Hey, just wanted to know what the background procedure is like for your Santa Claus."
I think that's actually, this is not the first time something similar like this has happened, and so I think there was an issue back in the day. I don't want to describe the deal, but yeah. I think that Dory knew of a Santa that had a similar issue.
Yeah.
So,
like killed somebody?
I think it was a different kind of crime, but yeah. I don't want to go into it because I can't remember exactly.
That's fine.
I don't want to accuse him of the wrong crime.
No,
but,
that's okay.
But I think this has been a thing. So yes, I don't think it's maybe a bad idea to say, hey, do you have a criminal background check required for your Santa before I send my child to sit on his lap?
I know that should have been my show poll today because I wonder if people like ever do that or are concerned
or would
about
you?
It. Yes, or would
I,
you do
I don't
it?
Think anybody does, but I
let
think
us know
maybe
in the comments.
Something you might
should do. Yeah, let do. Us know in the comments. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. First, if you're concerned about the AI bubble, man, I just saw a jobs report on how many jobs have been lost to AI. It's very concerning, but I can't say it's particularly surprising. I actually have a rant about AI I want to go on next, but are you concerned with the AI, with AI advancements, the talks of the bubble, the risk exposure of your retirement portfolio? If the answer is yes, or I don't know, should I be, attend Bulwark Capital Zach Abraham's preview live webinar. It's happening November 20th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. It's Bulwark's final webinar of the year. In it, they're going to discuss the impact AI is having on the market, a preview for 2026, and how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios. And as always, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to what? Lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So three things you can do in the same place. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. You can schedule your free risk portfolio, Know Your Risk Portfolio review. You can subscribe to Zach's daily market recap. And then you can also sign up to attend that November 20th live webinar. It's totally free. They make it easy to sign up and you can join it. You can passively listen. You can ask questions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. A little bit of national news that we'll get to. So there's a couple schools that are now implementing gun safety in elementary school. We talked about this issue before. It's been quite a while. But if you're talking about trying to like teach kids responsible gun ownership or what to do if they're around a firearm, you know, I think maybe the last time it came up is because of a child getting a hold of a family member's gun and some sort of accidental discharge. But this is from The Independent. Children are to be taught basics of gun safety in U.S. schools. Arkansas, Tennessee, and Utah are the first U.S. states to mandate gun safety education in public schools with lessons for children as young as five. So mandate. Imagine you could opt your kid out if you want. The new law requires teaching students about gun safety and proper storage, though only Utah's legislation includes an opt-out. Oh, answer again, if I just shut up and read it. So only in Utah you can opt. I don't like that. You should be able to opt your child out. I am a big believer that you should be able to opt your kid out of freaking anything. don't want them learning their ABCs, opt out. I really think it should be pick your pleasure as a parent. Mm-hmm. So I don't like that Arkansas and Tennessee are not allowing an opt out. That I think they'll probably get sued over that. The curriculum, often adapted from existing hunting safety courses, delivers a core message for children. Stop, don't touch, leave quickly, tell an adult if they find a firearm. And that's great messaging. I mean, that's really important. If you talk about safety things for kids, just stop, don't touch it, leave quickly. Is it something parents could teach them if they wanted to? I suppose. It's supported by Republicans and some nonpartisan groups, aims to prevent tragedies. The legislation faces criticism from gun control advocates who argue it shifts responsibility from adults to children. Yeah, I mean, I can see that. Every adult has a responsibility to safely secure their firearm, but we know there's a lot of instances where that doesn't happen. The effort follows a 2022 report by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which identified firearms as the leading cause of death among children and teenagers. So there's certainly a problem there. Is it the problem, a problem that schools should be the entity to teach kids about? I asked you in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, would you support gun safety being taught in elementary schools? Yes or no? Nicole, yes or no?
Yes. Yeah, I think that it would be a great, you know, actual solution to this problem, or an actual tangible thing that we can do to, you know, combat this problem that we have with accidental gun deaths, right? Because I think that we, you know, we're always going after the gun instead of the actual, like, what to what prevents the person from making the mistake with the gun, right? Yeah. And this actually attacks that problem. Now, I'm with you. You should be able to opt out of anything.
Yeah. Yep.
But yes, I actually think this is an actual thing that attacks the problem, which is the person that actually pulls the trigger, and not the gun.
I am yes, but only with an opt-out. So in this case, I'd only support Utah's version. I just, there's no way you can't allow parents to opt their kid out and to say, hey, I'm going to teach them that on my own, type of thing. So you guys are 74% say yes, 26% say no. Jill said, I voted no, but if they did it, it should be done by an outside group that is consistent statewide. A lot of people saying, I don't really trust schools, especially around here, to not turn that into an anti-gun sort of class. And I totally understand that. Brian says, it's a constitutional right. Kids need to learn to respect firearms and, you know, really understand how dangerous they are. They can't be played with, right? James Freeman over on Locals, basic safety age-appropriate thoughts are needed, not anti-gun brainwashing. You can see I have no faith in our schools to do it properly and remain neutral. And I it would vary. You'd have to be very strict in how it's administered and what it's going to look like. Matthew Cook, being responsible with guns is always a good message to advocate for rather than fear-mongering. Monty, I say no if taught by the school. However, if certified instructors were contracted to come in and teach it, then yes, instructors get some extra cash and the kids get taught correctly. Chris says, it's not part of basic education. This should be taught at home. And I can definitely understand that point as well. Not something I think Washington State will be embracing anytime soon. All right. So because I was in court this morning, I didn't have a time to tape Florida Report with Miranda. Can I just do one on my own? Will you even play the...
I think you're allowed.
Can you play it? No?
I can. It'll be a little tricky. I'll have to play last week's and then cut
it off. No, that's all right. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's not even controversial anymore. Meow. That's all right. Homeland Security announcing a major operation carried out in Florida. ICE arrests over 150 criminal illegal alien sex predators in Florida. That is nuts. 150 sex predators who also happen to be in the country illegally in a single state. Mm-hmm. And Florida's not even a sanctuary state. So imagine how many we have here. Imagine how many we have in a state that hides them and protects them and treats them like everyone else. Wild. And this is also relevant in Florida because this is the result of these partnerships that Florida, local and state law enforcement are helping. So in Florida, they're happy to help. Law enforcement in Florida is more than happy to help ICE track down, arrest, and get the hell out of their state sex predators. Every state should be on board with that. It's like, oh, the feds are going to come help us with that? Would love to. It says the Department of Homeland Security announced the arrest of more than 150 illegal alien sex offenders during a major enforcement surge across the state of Florida. The operation targeted child predators, rapists, and violent criminal illegal aliens with convictions including sexual assault of minors, rape, lewd and lascivious conduct, child exploitation, battery, and attempted homicide. In total, more than 230 criminal illegal aliens were arrested and off our streets. So 150 of them, that's just the sex predators. There was 230 total. Secretary Kristi Noem said, I call this operation Dirtbag because these individuals were not just sex traffickers. They targeted children. And she talks about some of the charges there. She says, our kids will now be safer. This partnership with Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida is a model we want to replicate across the country. I wish you could. I wish you could replicate it across the country. I mean, certainly they can carry out these enforcements here. ICE is able to operate still in the state of Washington. But having that assistance from local jurisdictions is key, and having the databases. Our state, they don't even know if the people living here are illegal and where they are, because they shield them, they hide them. And then if ICE arrests them, let's say they've got a warrant or something out and they go to the local jail, they're not going to be held, they're going to be cut loose. So an operation like that becomes much more difficult, not impossible in a state like Washington, but certainly much more difficult. All right. Valentine Roofing has just been awarded the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for the third year in a row. We only advertise with the best people. We only advertise with the best. A lot of stuff that Valentine can help you out with, including right now, great time, custom holiday lighting. Let them come out, light up your home for the holidays. Super cool. They also, in addition to doing roofs, which we'll talk about momentarily, they do cleaning of gutters and installation, attic insulation, even exterior cleaning. So a lot that they have to offer. But of course, key thing that they do is roofing. So if you call Valentine, you get honesty. If your roof can be repaired, they won't try to push you into a new roof. But if you do need a new roof, you can rest assured that your new roof will have a lifetime warranty. And they also have flexible financing options, including zero down and 0% interest. Taking care of your home has never been easier. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, 206-ROOFING. I'm just waiting till the final leaves fall to have them come over and clean out our gutters. I'm sure that they are not looking too pretty. So call 206-ROOFING. Please tell them you heard about them here on Undivided. All right. On Mayor Wilson officially being, well, it's not official until it's whatever you call it, certified, but it's official. Bill Biz says, Brandy, you have to appreciate the comedic value of our new Seattle elected officials, our own version of Portlandia. Yeah, I mean, we're always trying to outdo Portland and California. Allison Griffin, what about holding those accountable that steal from those stores, causing them to close? Yeah, that'll never happen under a Katie Wilson. Hold people accountable for causing the stores to close? No, you can't do that. The last Robespierre, I love watching voters go against their own self-interest. Yeah, and then they whine and say, why did our grocery store, my beloved grocery store in my neighborhood, close? Oh my gosh, it's a mystery. Lil Miss J, government taking over business, what could go wrong? Gosh, I see taxes going up further.
I think the most interesting thing to watch for is how quickly the police department gets a little shakeup. How quickly she gets her hands on the police department. If the chief gets out, if she lays off of it for a while, because she is very new to this job, like any job.
She's super anti-cop, has pretended not to be.
Mm-hmm.
But this new chief who, you know, he's fairly new. He's black. You think the white lady's going to come in, fire the black chief, who's been saying all this anti-Trump stuff? I think the chief knows, you know, because I've criticized a lot of what he said. He's like suggesting ICE is making up assaults against agents. He's said he's probably going to go to jail because he's going to stand up to Donald Trump. So he's saying all the right things to get a socialist to keep him in his job. So I don't know.
Possibly.
But who would put it past her to put some sort of like full-blown crazy activist in that position? All right, Glusenkamp.
Really quick, I like Spog, Mike Solon, the president of Spog. Yeah. His tweet this morning was, the vote count for Seattle's next mayor took so long that I almost forgot we had an election. And much like the public safety in Seattle, our election process needs to be reformed. Spog members also want to thank Mayor Harrell for his efforts to build back SPD, and we look forward to working or to continuing his legacy with Mayor-elect Wilson.
Interesting.
That was fun.
Yeah, that's snarky. I love it. On Glusenkamp, Perez, Dan Blatt, same thing Biden did with Kamala Harris. What did Biden do with Kamala Harris? I don't know what that means. Katie Williamson, I mind MGP way less than I thought I would, as she has proven to be more moderate than expected here in 3rd District and a champion of small business. Russell Morton, MGP is my congresswoman. I've been surprised by her actions. She has broken with her party on key votes like the one last night. I agree with her reasoning for voting to open the government. Patty Murray sticking her nose in the Starbucks situation, and just generally the Starbucks situation. Dave Marcus, Senator Patty Murray, and all the rest of them yahoos just need to keep their politics out of it. They've done no good for this state and this part of the country, but think that they can help Starbucks out. No, not helping Starbucks out. Joe Doe, I wrote Patty and told her to vote yes to open the government. She gaslighted me, saying it was Trump's fault. I'm glad you wrote, though. Of course she's going to say it's Trump's fault.
She wrote back. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's all her office. JHBB, is being a barista really an industry career that needs unionization? They'll unionize anything they can possibly unionize. On Representative Tara Simmons, Robert Parker says Tara was the governing person for civil survival and on payroll while arranging state budget set-asides. Read the 990s and the legal aid contracts. And I think that's what we're getting at, is there's a lot of stuff woven together here that doesn't seem right. Big Princess, Tara Simmons, rules for thee, but not for me. Yeah. Murderer hired to play Santa, Nancy Campbell says, background checks for Santa Claus. I am sure that most legitimate stores do background checks for Santa Claus. Like the Macy's and the Nordstrom's. Yeah, the Nordstrom's. I guarantee they do background checks. The swap meet in Tacoma? Touch and go. I'm not so sure. A couple other super chats. Joe Wilson, $10. We need a Brandy Cruz Halloween costume next year. Gorgeous long blonde locks, nails on point, an American flag, and a mischievous smile. LOL, just don't wear it near Cal Anderson Park. Wait, I can't dress as Brandy Cruz. I am Brandy Cruz.
But you can.
But you can if you'd like. Some long press-on nails, maybe. The Griffins.
These aren't press-on.
No, I said, but they would have to do press-on. They would have to. No, these are the real deal. The Griffins, teaching gun safety with kids would be incredible. With video games these days, it's important for kids to know reality versus fantasy. Yeah, to know that is a really dangerous thing. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, I just love this First Mark Insurance success story from Christine. She says, like a lot of you, you know, was putting off calling First Mark, and then she finally did, and she was kind of forced to because she said they got a little bit of a scare. She got a notification from her carrier that her insurance was being dropped in less than 30 days because the carrier was dissolving. So she's like, all right, I'm going to listen to Brandy. Called up First Mark. They talked through she has two businesses she had to insure. She says they found a way to work with an insurance company to bundle the two businesses into one plan. Then we worked on going through our home and vehicle insurance. In total, we're saving over $10,000 a year, along with adding a third new vehicle to the policy. She says, in fact, when I canceled our home insurance, our previous broker was curious to see what we got figured out and if he could match it. I shared the snippets and he was blown away. Our policy had been one of the highest cost home policies he'd seen, and he wasn't able to even come close. He was very impressed with what First Mark put together. There you have it. Even the other brokers are jealous of First Mark. So she says, thank you for your continual nagging about doing the First Mark challenge. It has really paid off. Well, I'm happy to hear that, Christine. So be like Christine and I. Join the First Mark family. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I love this. There were a lot of sort of like, I would say, veiled threats that the Trump administration made to federal workers, like critical federal workers like TSA. Don't be losers and call out sick because you're not getting your pay. Like, you need to step up for the country. So to reward TSA agents who did not call out sick during the shutdown, Kristi Noem is issuing $10,000 bonus checks. Here it is.
Rico, I want to present to you a check and say thank you from the American people. Appreciate it.
Oh, I love this.
Ashley, thank you.
Hell yeah. Yes.
And is Leo here? All right, Leo.
Oh my gosh. So do those other ones just have to stand around and watch because they did call out sick? She clearly called out
a lot of them, though. She's giving them out name by name.
Wouldn't that have been funny, though, if they made them stand behind her and they didn't get a check as like a shaming thing?
But Trump said, I'm going to get you bonuses. And people said, you can't do that. Where are you going to get that money? And he said, I'll find it. He did.
He found it. So he's like, we appreciate you not. And I don't know exactly where he found the money, but he says, we appreciate you not calling out sick, helping out, even though you weren't getting paid. $10,000. That's pretty great. Sweet deal. That is a pretty sweet deal. I love that. All right. That has been our closing sanity check. On time. started on time today. Wow. Didn't even think I was going to. Here we are. I don't know if we've ever done a show that was exactly an hour. Thank you for being here. Final live show of the week. We will have Sundays with subscribers on Sunday. Got a great guest, so can't wait to see you then, subscribers. We also have a live subscriber Q&A Sunday night, so I look forward to seeing you guys at that. If you'd like to become a subscriber, check it out, see what it's all about. You can always do a 7-day free trial. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. Have a fantastic weekend. See subscribers on Sunday. See the rest of you on Monday.